This is Radio Influence.
You're listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and text Crush at 101260 with your questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks.
All right, and welcome to Crush Performance, everybody. Jeff Crushell here, the con man behind the glass, and we're your weekly source for performance information. Hey, if you want to get in touch with us, do so. Crushperformance.com is the website. If you want to email us with questions, comments, smart remarks, or listen, if you have a topic or question you'd like us to look into, let us know. Info@crushperformance is the email. We answer every single message we get. And if we like your idea, we may dedicate a segment or an entire episode to your question or thought. And we've done that. We've done that in the past, and we really, really do appreciate it. On Twitter, at Jeff Crush, and on Facebook, on YouTube, and on Instagram, just go to Crush Performance. Listen, we are talking FIFA World Cup here today, and rightfully so. The biggest show in sport, is it? Well, we're going to look at that later in the show. What are the top sporting events on the sporting calendar as we go through the big list? It is certainly right up there, and there is a lot of money involved. Today on the show, we will talk the value of soccer franchises in the world. And man, it is big, big business. We'll be joined with Mike Ozanian, assistant managing editor at Forbes and co-host of the award-winning Forbes Sports Money Show. We're going to talk to Mike about the 15th annual list of the world's most valuable soccer teams. It's out. It just came out. And the numbers are alarming. But not only that, how quickly the value of these franchises are growing here over the last 5 years really get you thinking about what's going on and what does the future hold? What does it mean to the fan? And how does soccer sort of fit into the world of professional sports? Well, the World Cup being awarded to the Americas in 2026, that's a big move and frankly, a pretty smart move for the business of soccer and FIFA overall. I'm sure that was a major consideration when we looked at what's going on in the world of sport and finances. We know that in North America, in the Americas, soccer's lagged a little bit, but it's certainly growing in popularity. Just the idea that it's coming to North America will boost it. There's no question about it. When we look at what's going on so far in the World Cup, Connor, it has been absolutely amazing. I think it's lived up to all of the hype so far when we sort of look at the first days of this massive tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. And it starts off with Russia getting the big 5-0 win on their home soil over Saudi Arabia. A good way to start it, you've got to think, creates the excitement in Russia, the host nation. And then the second day, a couple of 1-0 games, but goals in the 89th minute and then an extra time. And then you get Cristiano Ronaldo just cementing himself as the top player in the world. Did he dive a little bit on that last free kick play? Maybe a little bit, but hey, that finish was world class. And then today, man, Iceland, I thought that might be it. I thought, you know, they had their good run in Euro 2 years ago. Maybe this is it. Argentina should have no problem with it. They go ahead and draw 1-1. Lionel Messi, penalty shot, can't score. So his reputation for being a bit of a choker on the international stage seems to continue. My favorite part about that, though, is the goalie who made the save. I don't want to butcher his name too much. Hans Halldórsson, he's a film director when he's not playing soccer. The Iceland's coach is a dentist when he's not coaching the international soccer team. It's such a fun story. And yeah, so far the soccer's been great.
Yeah, it's been great. And there's lots to talk about here. So I have a question for you. I'm going to ask you here in a second if you have an idea of who you like to take it all and why. But we have 32 countries competing in 8 groups. Could the World Cup of Soccer be the toughest championship in sport to win? I mean, it happens every 4 years, the build-up, the qualification rounds. It's tough, not only just to win this tournament, but just to get into this tournament.
Yeah, I mean, if you're an Italian fan, Chilean, United States, the Dutch, I mean, there's a lot of great soccer programs that didn't make it in. And sometimes you'll see the star players not, you know, participate in those pre-tournament games, and that can be pretty painful when it turns out that it doesn't get you into it. So, yeah, it's tough. I think there's a lot that are tough. I look at the Memorial Cup every year. You have to win your league. And then you'd go to a tournament and you have to play against 3 of the other best teams in the nation. I think that's a tough one. But since it comes once every 4 years, you really have to build your program up for it, similar to Euro, similar to the Olympics. Those are tough ones to win.
Yeah, very tough one to win. Would you be comfortable saying it's the toughest? Or would you have to sit and think about it?
I would have to think about it. It's in the category, absolutely, but I don't know if it's the toughest.
Okay, well, it might be one of the biggest. There's no doubt about it. So the World Cup is the globe's biggest sporting event. There's over 3.4 billion people expected to tune in at some point to watch this event, which is incredible. 1 billion people watched the 2014 World Cup final between Argentina and Germany, according to FIFA. And by comparison, the global audience for the Super Bowl is roughly about 150 million. There is absolutely no comparison. We could look at the numbers from the Winter Olympics and Summer Olympics, which are the two other big major sporting events on the calendar. But this World Cup, the number of eyes who will be, you know, tuning in and looking at this competition is unbelievable. It's no wonder the revenue is there. Don't you agree?
Absolutely. I mean, it's the world's game, right? It's so simple. A lot of countries where it's tough to have a hockey rink, or it's tough to afford football equipment or things like that. In soccer, you need a pair of shoes and a ball. And you don't even need a pair of shoes in some places. You can just get a ball and play. It's really the world's game. And absolutely. It's not too surprising when you hear about that.
No, it's not. And there's so many great versions of this sport as well. So that brings us to our text Twitter question of the day. On Twitter, it's at Jeff Crush. Our text number is 101260. Standard text rates do apply. But the question is this: is the World Cup of Soccer the toughest championship to win? That's my big question, because I've been thinking about this a lot. You know, we've just went through the NBA finals. We went through, of course, the NHL. Which is grueling. Physically, there'd be an argument there I think we could discuss. We look at what's happening in the U.S. Open in golf. That, I mean, the elements there, it's a totally different game, but I mean, that's tough unto itself. But what is the toughest championship in sport to win? And honestly, Connor, I've been around the horn here a couple times. This might be it. You know, I'm looking at it historically and looking at the teams that have risen to the top, and every 4 years, just getting an opportunity to compete, but then work through your group and then come out to the final. Listen, man, I think this just might be it. That's the text question of the day. So get us your answers on Twitter. It's at Jeff Crush. It's right up there.
It is. And I think one of the things that kind of adds to it would be that it's a one and done situation. You get one chance once you get to the elimination games, kind of the playoffs of the World Cup. You have one bad game, you're done. Similar to football. It's not where you have a 5-game series or a 7-game series where you could have a couple lapses and still win. You got to be at the top of your game when you go out there.
Yeah, everything counts for sure. And that being said, one of the interesting things that's coming out of this, you know, development and this expansion of soccer at the highest level, Connor, is the development. And we're seeing some incredible developmental programs around the globe. Is it driven by finances? Well, we know that winning rules. And we also know that in soccer, the top clubs, it's very, very, I guess, scaled towards the top clubs. The talent and the money really hover around the top 20 teams in the sport in every single league. So there is a hoarding of talent. And there's also a big disparity in where the revenue is coming from. But it's all about marketing. And let me tell you right now, if you look at what these, you know, franchises and teams have done within their countries, they've really marketed themselves and created a business model that's unbelievable. Connor, if we look at some of the developmental programs around the globe, take Barcelona, for example, you could go in various cities in North America and you will find Barcelona high school and developmental academies that run under the umbrella of Barcelona FC, with the same sort of teaching progression and philosophy of Barcelona FC. They're not only developing young players globally, which I believe is great because they have a really strong approach and an understanding of developing talent in the game, but they're also scouring the landscape for future talent for their organization. It's unbelievable the network these guys have created. If we just talk about that organization alone.
Yeah. And internationally, you see it all over the place, right? But it is very cool to see that they are out there scouting, trying to develop a lot of players at a young age. And, you know, even locally, I don't think it was under the Barcelona program, but you've got Alfonso Davies, who's the 17-year-old. And we've heard stories that he might be recruited to go play in Europe right now. He's with the Vancouver Whitecaps organization. So, yeah, I think even just locally in Canada, the developmental is getting a lot stronger. And with that announcement, I mean, you just kind of wonder, there's guys, it's 8 years away. Well, there's people that could be 12 years old right now that kind of think, hey, maybe soccer is something I really want to pursue because I could play in a World Cup. The second time Canada, as the men's group, has ever played in a World Cup, That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah. So when I've been over in Europe with Major League Baseball, I've had a chance to rub shoulders with some of the top soccer organizations, football organizations over there. And when they're scouting young talent, and listen, they have tryouts for 8-9-year-olds, Connor. They're not necessarily looking for ball strike or positioning or game awareness. Not at all. Not even in their teen development. They're just looking for, hey, how do the players run? How do they interact with other players? How do they use space? That's what they're looking at in these younger athletes. And that'll sort of, you know, take the talent guys, that'll gravitate, you know, towards those certain type of players. It'll take them towards those players. But they also know if they have an athlete that just runs well, doesn't understand the game, they can create something there. If you look at one of the most successful organizations maybe in the history, in terms of developing players, you have to look at the famed Dutch Academy Ajax. Listen, back, you know, maybe 10, 15 years ago, these guys were a powerhouse at the top levels of the game. But as the revenues shifted and money really started coming into the game and these organizations and franchises started operating like big business, and the talent started gravitating towards the money, they couldn't keep up. Their market just didn't allow it. So guess what Ajax did? Ajax shifted into a talent development factory. And right now, they're developing some of the greatest talent in the world. They develop these players and they sell them to the top teams. That's their business. Incredible stuff. We could talk about that later in the show for sure. Listen, we got to cut out for the break. Keep those texts coming in, everybody. What is the toughest championship in the world to win? Is it the World Cup of Soccer? Yeah, keep them coming. Coming up after the break, we're going to dive into the 15th annual Forbes list of the world's most valuable soccer franchises with Mike Ozanian. Stick around, everybody. Crush Performance, we're your weekly source for performance information. Join me, Jeff Kershaw, and the Con Man as we dig deep into the science and research of talent development and skill acquisition to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it really takes to achieve human maximum performance. And go to our website, crushperformance.com, to get details on my brand new book, The Performance Plan, strategies for top performance in sport, business, coaching, and life. Our goal is to help you get better, and it starts with The Performance Plan. Get control, get focused, and get results. We're Crush Performance. Join us weekly right here on Radio Influence.
This is Crush Performance. If you have questions, comments, or smart remarks, write to us at crushperformance.com.
And welcome back to Crush Performance, everybody. If you want to get in touch with us, do so. Crushperformance.com is the website. Follow us on Twitter at Jeff Crush and on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. You can go to Crush Performance and hook up with us there. Listen, we're talking World Cup today. Is it the biggest show in sport? Well, it's definitely up there if we look at the rankings. According to USA Today and some of the data that's out there coming from Touchdown Wire, if we look at the top 11 biggest events on the calendar, number 11 is the NBA Finals. 16 million viewers, 215 countries, 50 languages. The Rugby World Cup comes in at number 10. Tour de France, number 9. The Cricket World Cup, number 8. 7 is Wimbledon, believe it or not. And Roger Federer has the most endorsement money of any athlete at $65 million. And Serena, of course, being the highest paid female athlete anywhere by far. Tennis has a lot going for it. Number 6 is the Masters. Number 5 is the Super Bowl. It's broadcast over 200 countries. Number 4 is Champions League Final. Then come the big 3. The Winter Olympics. World Cup falls number 2. And the Winter Olympics is number 1. But when it comes to revenue, could the World Cup be one of the top money earners on the sporting calendar? Well, to talk about that and the 15th annual list of the most valuable soccer franchises, we're joined now by Mike Ozanian from Forbes magazine. Mike, thanks for joining us today.
Always a pleasure to be on your show.
Well, very timely conversation here. You guys just released a list of the world's most valuable soccer teams, and the World Cup is underway, and the big announcement for 2026 is also on the table. So a lot of exciting things going on in the world of soccer.
Yeah, this is the time when soccer is a global spectacle. And of course, along with that, you get an incredible TV audience, and you get the great soccer players showcased throughout the world, which is, other than the World Cup, probably the Olympics is the other time where everybody gets to cast their eyes on the greatest players.
Well, we see some of the numbers in terms of viewership and following, and it is neck and neck right now. I think in historically speaking, the Olympics has sort of been the front runner in terms of global audience. But boy, this World Cup and the numbers they're talking about here in Russia are incredible.
Yeah, it's soccer is the most popular team sport in the world. And when you think of team sports, I tend to be sort of North American centric. So I tend to think always as a kid growing up and playing baseball, hockey, basketball, you know, but really of those, the only thing that comes close globally to soccer is basketball.
Right. And of course, basketball does well, but basketball doesn't have anything like the World Cup that really unites the world and gets people rooting for their tribe, so to speak. Your list, the world's most valuable soccer teams of 2018, which came out earlier this week, is a fantastic sort of overview of the business of soccer. Because, Mike, holy cow, this is big, big business, isn't it?
Yeah, the average team is now worth $1.69 billion. So in terms of dollars, as opposed to euro or British pounds, the 20 most valuable teams rose 14% over a year ago. And what we've really seen happen in soccer is the teams that are in the leagues that have the biggest TV deals are the richest. So, for instance, the Premier League now gets $4.28 billion a year for broadcasting. Second is the Bundesliga at $1.65 billion. The Serie A then at $1.33, that's the Italian league. And then La Liga, $1.33, followed by the French league at $950 million a year. That's why 8 of our 20 most valuable teams are English teams that play in the Premier League because they have the richest TV deal.
Yeah, and it's all about TV, Mike. And I wanted to ask you about this because some of these numbers really caught me off guard. That 14% over the last year, Mike, that's a big number. But your data is also showing since 2013, the average price or the average value of a soccer team has risen 74%. Is this solely television and maybe now internet and streaming? That's a massive jump. Why now?
It's also a lot to do with the shirt and naming rights deals on stadiums, but mostly I would say shirt and kit deals, which are the uniform deals. So now you have teams getting $50, $60, $70 million a year for somebody to sponsor their shirt and the same amount for somebody to sponsor the uniform at large. So it's tremendous sponsorship dollars as well, not just the simply the broadcasting. The broadcasting is league-wide. Some of it gets distributed based on how often a team is on TV as well as how high up in the standings they finish. But the uniform deals are really something that I don't think 5 years ago people anticipated. Real Madrid has a shirt sponsorship deal with the Dubai airline Emirates for $82 million a year. Barcelona, Real's Spanish rival, they have the top kit deal. That's with Nike, $116 million a year. Absolutely incredible. And now they're starting to come up with a third way to monetize the uniform, which is a sort of like a sleeve deal, jersey sleeve deal. So Arsenal has one for $13 million a year. And you and I haven't even talked about one of our favorite tournaments yet, which is very rich, the annual Champions League.
Yeah. Yeah, the Champions League is the definitely the pièce de résistance and, of course, the pinnacle for every team over there. We're talking with Mike Ozanian, assistant managing editor at Forbes. Mike, the Champions League is the ultimate goal for any organization right now. And with the money involved, we could see why they're spending so much effort and resources on player development, player health, and everything that's going on behind the scenes. means. But isn't it interesting also the cultures that they're creating? You know, in your great article, you talk about Manchester United being number one, but the Spanish giants, you called them, and I loved it, Real Madrid and Barcelona right behind. Two teams in Spain are really driving the way. It has a lot to do with culture and I guess what these teams do within their communities, don't you think, as well?
That's actually a great point. You know, I wish I had thought of that before I wrote the article. I would have included some of that in there. But, you know, that's so true because these teams spend a tremendous amount of time and money in their communities, developing players, starting when they're kids, and working with them and working with the developmental programs. You know, Germany, when I was growing up in the late 60s and early 70s, was a powerhouse, as they are today. But they stopped paying as much attention to developing players. And it was about 7, maybe 10 years ago that, you know, Germany had sort of went into this funk where they weren't the powerhouse that they used to be in the international tournaments and so forth. And they went back to development and went back to youth programs like the Spanish leagues were doing, for instance. And that's helped put them back at top, which, because so much of your wealth in soccer and European soccer depends on performance, has helped push up the values of these German teams the last 5, 6 years again. So you're absolutely right.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, we take a monster like Barcelona. These guys are genius, Mike. If you look at what they're doing around the world, we see these Barcelona soccer academies showing up in certain parts of the U.S. and in Canada. They're over in China and in Australia. And these are like little school academies after school academies. But they're not only developing players, they're looking for global talent as well. How genius are these guys in terms of their big picture viewing? And I guess maybe that's why they're at the top of these revenue charts.
Yeah, and I know, one of the complaints that some of these really top teams have had is that they develop these players and then these players are then signed by teams, you know, sort of second tier teams that don't spend the money on developing them. So, you know, that's an issue that they're trying to deal with. But on the other hand, these rich teams, the Manchester Uniteds, Manchester Cities, Barcelonas, Reals, Bayern Munichs, they actually get the other end of the food chain, where when these players become true stars and the lesser teams or the teams with less revenue can't afford them, they then either borrow those players from those teams or outright buy them. So the food chain is very interesting in soccer. It sort of goes around. It's an interesting ecosystem. And I guess the biggest concern right now may be the fact that some of these really good teams, we've heard John Henry, who owns Liverpool, for example, say that, you know, he thinks the top 5 or 6 teams, Manchester City, Manchester United, Liverpool, Chelsea, they should be getting a higher percentage of the TV revenue. So I don't know if that's going to happen, but I think that that's the big issue in soccer right now in Europe, which is how do we distribute or make sure the money goes in such a way that these leagues can be competitive without, for lack of a better word, penalizing the superior teams, the great teams, who are the teams most responsible for generating the revenue.
Yeah, no, that's a really interesting point. We're talking with Mike Ozanian from Forbes magazine and also the co-host of the award-winning Forbes Sports Money. You can follow Mike on Twitter, at Mike Ozanian. Mike, that's an interesting point. You know, if we look at a league like Major League Baseball, for example, we see ticket hikes when the big teams roll into town, when Boston and St. Louis and, of course, the Yankees and the Dodgers roll into town. We'll see ticket hikes for those types of games. but yet the revenue sharing across the league is pretty standard. Other than, you know, I guess maybe in Major League Baseball, they really do own the rights to, I guess, maybe their hometown, which is an interesting model. In your article, you also mentioned the top most valuable and most profitable teams. And there's a big difference between generating revenue and being a profitable organization. I thought that was an interesting distinction in your article.
Yeah, because some teams are quite profitable in soccer because they may, certainly on a year-to-year basis, not spend as much on players or on some of the other things that you mentioned earlier, like developing players, or a big thing now that teams spend money on that 5, 6, 7 years ago they didn't at all was analytics. Everything is so analytical now in all these sports. And whether it be analyzing players or analyzing teams and strategy and so forth. So the team values, and when you look at people who are actually in the real world buying and selling teams, is largely based on revenue. You know, so these guys will typically pay, depending on the team, anywhere from, you know, 2 to 4, maybe for the top teams, 5 times revenue. But what's happened in soccer, there's been a shift to with these fair play rules to making it so that owners can't keep funding losses. So you don't have some rich owner tucked away someplace who's just simply, for instance, doing what maybe Manchester City did 4 or 5 years ago and just running huge losses because the owner has an endless supply of oil, which leads to an endless supply of cash to pay for players. They want it to be run on a more responsible level, and I think that's helped. So those two factors, the fact that some teams don't quite spend so much money on analytics and players, player development, I should say, and the fact that teams are now being run generally in a more responsible way because of the fair play rules, that's boosted the overall profits for the top teams.
Yeah, interesting stuff. You know, Mike, when we look at your article as well and we talk about profitable teams, I'm really enamored by the North American market. And you say you agree, and I'm with you, we're kind of North American-esque in terms of our thinking. But when we get outside and look at this list of the top most profitable teams and the most valuable teams in sport as well, the power of North America, and particularly the U.S., it's incredible to me, Mike. I mean, the Dallas Cowboys, the Patriots, of course, the Washington Redskins, the Texans, the NFL, holy smokes, it is just a powerful machine if you think about how, in the big picture, small just the U.S. is.
Yeah, you know, you could even go down to something, Jeff, like sneaker sales, where the North American market probably accounts for 80% of total global, you know, basketball shoe market. It's the money spent is incredible. I would say that a big reason for it, something you touched on when we began our chat, which is the fact that TV and its impact on sports, and now I would include with television streaming, really the U.S. market, the North American sports, were the first to realize the potential of TV. So as we saw TV rights fees really start to climb, it was U.S. sports first. Soccer has been something, and European sports, soccer has been something that really has only been the last, let's say, maybe decade, where U.S. sports started that probably 25 years ago. So it's further along, and so the money climbed much faster, much higher earlier on. For instance, we've just seen with the Premier League, it signed a streaming deal with Amazon. So, you know, this is going to be a first. Amazon, of course, started streaming with the NFL last year.
Yep.
That's going to be the next game changer. And I think that soccer's in a good position to cash in on that. The NFL, I don't know. It's funny. The ratings have been down the last 2 years.
Right.
Yeah. Overall. But what seems to be more important as far as what the advertisers and networks care about is not so much your absolute rating, but your relative rating. So the NFL's average rating may go from, let's just say, a rating of, 15 to a rating of 12, which is a pretty steep fall. But still, if the next highest rating or the next highest show is a rating of 3, the NFL is still fantastic.
Right.
And I think it's the same thing for soccer. Even if ratings don't go up, because they were talking about for the Premier League last year, you know, that a lot of teams saw their ratings go down, but still the ratings were much, much higher than any other form of programming. So people will still pay their satellite providers, will still pay Sky to televise for their Premier League, even though the rate, because it's still relative to other programming, by far the most popular.
Well, and there's no doubt there, and there's a storm brewing, isn't there, Mike? What an ingenious decision, I believe, in the big picture for the sport of soccer to award the 2026 World Cup to the Americas. This is a strategic move, and also, I got to believe, driven by money when we sort of hear some of the rumors of the revenue potentials by bringing it to North America as opposed to Morocco. That seems to be a good decision financially, but in terms of exposure and what we just talked about in terms of tapping into this North American crazy fanatical sports market, this is a really good move by FIFA.
Yeah, and I think I would agree with that. And I also think part of it is you don't want to get it as you're trying to increase, you know, America lags most of the world in terms of its interest in soccer.
Right.
Even though it's been improving, it's still behind. And I think it's a great way to keep the momentum going. So we've seen major growth in Major League Soccer. We're now seeing franchises, expansion teams in Major League Soccer that were going for $40 million maybe 5-6 years ago, now going for $100 million. So, and we're seeing more participation. We've seen participation in youth football decrease as parents become concerned with health issues for their kids. So I think soccer in the North America wants to keep the momentum going, wants to keep fans interested, because as you mentioned, the two big things are the World Cup and the Olympics. So you're on, you always have that 2-year gap. And so you have it in Russia, and then you're going to have it in Qatar. Well, we don't want it too far from North America too long. Let's bring it back here to help keep the momentum in the growth of the sport going in North America.
Yeah, great stuff, Mike. Well, listen, really appreciate your time today, everybody. The article is called The World's Most Valuable Soccer Teams. Came out in Forbes. You can check it out at Forbes.com. Mike, appreciate your time today. So great to have you back on the show. We have to do this way more often. Much appreciated.
I look forward to it. Thanks again, and hope to talk to you soon.
Connor, great conversation with Mike there. Really appreciate him coming on. He's really busy, but boy, those are some big numbers. And I don't know if you have had a chance to look at the most valuable franchises on the planet. Soccer does very well, but the North American sports, look, North America has it down. There's big, big revenue to be had in North America. And if we look at, you know, the operating income, and that's what it really revolves around, is the amount of revenue these teams are generating. The Dallas Cowboys are number one by far. Their annual operating income is $350 million, thereabouts, right in there. Manchester United is the closest second at $254 million. The NFL is just incredible to me. Don't you think? If you look at the size of North America compared to the world and the fans of soccer, how the North American sport franchises run their business, it's incredible.
Yeah, they do a very good job. I mean, the TV rights there, I'm sure the radio rights for the Dallas Cowboys are a pretty big deal. And advertising in that massive stadium, they do everything so well. They merchandise everything, too. Anything you want, NFL. I mean, I'm embarrassed to say the things that I own that have the Los Angeles Chargers logo on them. It's kind of embarrassing. They do such a good job of that. And I think the TV rights are huge for them as well. But yeah, they do a really good job. And interesting conversation there.
Yeah, great. And if you're interested in this conversation with Mike, go and read that article. It's the 15th annual list of most valuable soccer teams on the planet. It really drives developmental sport. The influence down to the developmental levels is really, really powerful right now because they're interested in developing young players. Now, we have to be careful here. That goes to the conversation of specialization and burnout, dropout. So we have to handle this properly. But to understand where all these teams are coming from is great. Let's cut out for a quick break. When we come back, I'll go through the 10 most valuable teams. We'll see where soccer lies, and we'll get to our text question of the day. Please get to us. Is the World Cup of Soccer the toughest championship to win? We're going to answer your texts, read them out after this. Stick around, everybody.
You're listening to Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. Get the Crush blogs, podcasts, and performance links at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Thanks for hanging on over the break. Just got off a great conversation with Mike Ozanian, the assistant managing editor at Forbes and co-host of the managing editor of the award-winning Forbes Sports Money Show. A great conversation as we just sort of reviewed his latest article, the 15th annual list of most valuable soccer franchises. Look, there is money to be made out there. But for me, a couple of interesting things that have come out of that conversation. Number one, I think, was the idea that these teams are spending money now developing their talent, and a lot of this revenue that they're developing and implementing these massive business structures is going back into player development, player talent. And it's also interesting to note that all the talent and the money has really, really sort of focused on the top 20 teams across all the leagues. But when we look at soccer as a whole, the most valuable teams on the planet, they're right up there. But believe it or not, in our relatively small North American market, there are teams that just dominate. The number one most valuable team out there right now is the Dallas Cowboys, estimated value at $4.8 billion. Just behind them, Manchester United, which is the most valuable soccer franchise, $4.12 billion. Real Madrid, Barcelona right behind them. The New York Yankees come in fifth at $4 billion right now. That is a great, great job by the Steinbrenner family to really bring that franchise up there. New England Patriots, six at $3.7 billion. The New York Knicks, the Los Angeles Lakers, the New York Giants, the Golden State Warriors, and the Washington Redskins come in 10. No baseball teams there. I'm actually kind of surprised about that. They're coming, I think, but baseball is just not global enough.
Did you not have the Yankees in there?
Oh, yeah, sorry, Yankees. You're right.
I mean,
good call.
The pinstripes are always going to sell.
Yeah, you're right. No, that's a good call. I was thinking there would be more baseball teams. I thought the Dodgers would be up there. I think they're valued now maybe somewhere around the $2.5 billion. I thought there'd be more baseball in there, though.
You know, the MLB hats are so popular and so nice. I mean, maybe there in the Dodgers TV deal is crazy. There's just so many games.
Yeah.
And a lot of people just don't go to games as much because they have, what, 82 they can go to, or is it 75, 76?
Yep. The streaming is a big part of it now, and the television coverage is great. A lot of this revenue, you know, talking to Mike, the revenue that we've seen, the increases in the soccer values, is generated by the television deals. It's a big thing. Now the advertising is coming in. They're selling patches on sleeves for hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah, now the NBA team's all wearing a corporate patch on the front of their jersey.
Yeah.
It's kind of the wave of the future.
Yeah. I mean, you look at the NASCAR model, you can buy one of those little decals on the rear fender that's like 6 inches by 2 inches for a couple hundred thousand if you want to get in on a major race.
Yeah. European clubs have been doing it for a long time. Soccer clubs, there's always a big company logo on the front.
Yeah.
It's kind of the way they go. I hope the NHL doesn't do it, but I think it's going that way.
Well, we see it in Europe, right?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And yeah, I kind of hope they don't either. I really hope they kind of try to keep that uniform fairly pure, though. That is a valuable, valuable commodity, no question about it. We have to thank Mike Ozanian for coming on the show. When we look at the World Cup, the text question of the day, ladies and gentlemen, is the World Cup of Soccer the toughest championship to win? Now, I'm kind of thinking, you know, when I go through everything, that it's definitely one of the toughest, if not the toughest championship to win. But there's some good answers here. Yes, the World Cup is the hardest championship to win. It happens every 4 years. You need to qualify to even participate. Those teams that do qualify are the best in the world, and each team is made up of the very best of that nation. Extremely hard, especially if you come from a small nation, from Broker Dan. On the other side of that coin, this text comes in. No, it's not. because the world's best 32 teams don't go, because every region in the world can only send so many teams. So many of the world's best teams aren't there. And especially this year, where not all the groups are very tough, lots of the good teams get an easy road into the round of 16. Strong argument. That's the yin and the yang of this conversation right there, Connor.
Yeah. And I mean, there's a lot of people that think the European clubs would be a little more strong. So you have the Euro, which could be tougher because they're, you know, like he said, are allotted to certain regions.
Yeah. I don't know if the Euro Cup's as difficult to qualify for, but I would probably agree that the level of competition there is much, much higher. And this actually text came in as well. No, the Euro Cup, much harder to win, better teams top to bottom. And I agree with that, I think. I don't know if it's harder to get into, though, to qualify. And plus, you have to put together players from different teams to represent your country. I mean, there's so many variables there. But here's a couple of good ones that are sort of along the same stream from Trevor. Crush, I believe it's March Madness. There's a strong argument for March Madness, Connor. Not only that, the NCAA tournament, no wins, no ties, got to win it all against 64 other teams. Boy.
Yeah, March Madness and NCAA. I look at the football as well. You look at the University of Central Florida this year. They went undefeated, and they didn't get a bye into the BCS Championship games because they didn't play the level of competition. But they were undefeated. They never lost a game. Leaving it up to a committee can be a little, I don't know if it's difficult, but frustrating for sure.
Yeah, I don't know if I like that system at all.
No, and it leaves a lot of, you know.
Anytime there's a human element making the decision, man, it gets risky for me.
Would UCF beat Alabama? Probably not. Yeah. But wouldn't you like to see an undefeated team have a chance to play for the title?
Absolutely, I would.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah, we should have all written letters for that one for sure. Well, when we look at the money, let's get back to this World Cup that's going on. It's been fantastic. Some great performances by some of the best players in the world. But some of the numbers coming out of this. For this World Cup, $110, cheapest ticket. The highest runs right around $1,100. Those cheap tickets are only available to Russian citizens, believe it or not. So you get a hometown discount for going to those games, and rightfully so. I think, you know, the attendance has been pretty great. As a matter of fact, there has been 2.4 million tickets pre-sold ahead of the start of this tournament. So they did a really, really good job in Russia getting people out to the games. The total attendance at the 2014 World Cup in Brazil was 3.4 million people, Connor. That's an average of 53,000 people per game. That is a very, very respectable number.
Yeah, and it just seems like it's one of those events where people are going to go. The ticket prices might be high, and it's great that they have a cheaper amount for the locals to go and watch a game and experience it in their city. But it's just such a world-class event that I think there's always going to be people in the seats.
Yeah, no question about it. Some other numbers that come out of it. Ronaldo, who just put on a spectacular show in his first appearance in the 2018 World Cup. He has 322 million followers combined in his Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. This guy has got it dialed in, man. And if you take him, Messi, and maybe one or two of the other top players in pro soccer, if you look at the endorsement money these guys are making, $300-400 million combined. I mean, it's massive.
Yeah, Neymar as well.
Neymar would be the other big one. If you look at the followers these guys have, incredible. In this World Cup, $400 million is the total prize money that we split up amongst the winners. $1.65 billion of marketing rights revenue in the 2015 to 2018 cycle. $3 billion to get in on the television broadcast right revenue for FIFA in the 2015-28 cycle. And over the next 4 years, they're predicting it's going to be $3.5 billion. That goes back to that conversation about television. The biggest number I think that I've seen related to FIFA World Cup has to do with the North American announcement that it's coming to the Americas. They're predicting that over $14 billion of revenue is going to be generated at that World Cup, the highest ever. $14 billion, Connor. So big money. All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. Hey, let's enjoy these games. I want to thank Mike Lazanian for joining us today and sharing the background look at his great article, The Most Expensive Franchises in Soccer. Coming up in the next few weeks, we're going to look at the mind, the war on sugar, and some sleep. Until then, everybody, stay safe and perform well.
Goodbye now. Don't forget to ride.
Chris Landry inviting you to join me for Landry Football Podcast every Tuesday and Thursday. We'll give you the coaching and scouting angle to the college and NFL game. Film breakdowns, scouting reports, X's and O's, the latest inside scoop, coaching search information. We've got it all for you. I'll take my experiences as a coach and a scout and bring it to you, the fan, to give you access to the best football information on the college and pro level. Join us at LandryFootball.com. And remember, the Landry Football Podcast right here, as well as Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.